Good afternoon. We'd like to welcome everyone to the Mesa City Council study session for Monday, January 23rd, 2012. We'd like to excuse Councilmember Richens, who is supposed to be on the phone. You there?
Hello.
Hello. You know, he sounds like he's up in the ceiling in the back of the room. He's stuck up there in the ductwork or something. You want to say that again? Can we do a sound check, Dave?
Sure.
He's still on the vents.
Okay. All righty.
Perfect.
Who's joining us on the phone or from the ductwork, whichever it is, I don't know. We'll start today's study session by reviewing the agenda for tonight's regular council meeting. Look at page 2, items 3A through 3C. 3D through 5A.
Okay.
5B through 5F.
Mayor, I believe item 5B.
5D is in dog.
5B is in boy.
Oh, B is in Bravo.
That the police service director is asking us to remove that item.
So 5 Bravo is deleted from the agenda. Okay. Anything else on that page? 5G to 5J. 5K to 6D. Item 6E. Now, I missed last week. I'm assuming you had adequate discussion on this last week. Okay, good. At least I'm hoping that's why everyone's quiet. It's a fairly big deal. 6F through 6I.
Oh, Mayor.
Mr. Brady?
You know, we ought to probably go back because there's just that one.
Oh, that one change?
Change. So we ought to have Mr. Rigby come and just brief the council. Because that happened since Thursday. So we ought to just.
This would be on item 6 Echo. Yeah. Mr. Rigby.
Good morning, Mayor. Good afternoon, Mayor. It's been a busy day.
What happens when you take one of the T's off the Scott? You start forgetting where you are.
Good point.
Seems to me we had this conversation on Thursday.
Oh, you did. Good.
All right.
I'm glad you get organizational abuse even when I'm not here.
It's filtered through the whole organization. So, since Thursday morning, we continue to work on the agreement to clean up the last final details of it, and we wanted to bring to your attention one material change to the agreement with ABLE. First off, let me say that the ABLE project was approved by the airport this morning at the airport board meeting, and we also wanted to bring aware this material change. We wanted to make sure that in the event that the project comes in above what we projected be the bond debt and the project cost, is the ability for the airport and or the city the ability to come back and decide whether or not to proceed with the project. So we wanted to make that clear that the airport and the city have that ability to make that choice how to move forward.
But Mayor, Council, let's make it clear. Right now, today, the everything we're looking at as far as, this is just an assumption. So the assumption today is based upon the current bid amounts for the facility, as well as a ground lease with the airport for the land on which the facility will be built. Based on what the market is telling us today, and our best guesses or estimates, I shouldn't use the word guesses, estimates from our financial advisors, that the amount of the ground lease and the amount not necessary to pay off the bonds will be fine. We'll be able to meet and stay within the budget amount that's been determined by ABLE Engineering. All we're suggesting here is it's just a contingency that if things do not go as expected and their rates are much higher, then we'd come back to the airport board, come back to the council, and see if we couldn't find an arrangement that would work for all parties. If not, then obviously we'd have to terminate the agreement. So that provision has now been added wasn't there before. So it's been added to kind of provide for that.
So we've agreed on a price with Able.
Right.
And that's based on our current knowledge and understanding. And there's cushion in that price.
Correct.
What we're saying is that should the world change, and you know, we know it can, but right now we don't anticipate significant changes, and it would take fairly significant change in world conditions and financial market conditions for this to get outside our level of comfort or the range that we've set. But if that does happen, we've included a protection for us to say, well, we've agreed with you on a price. We're going to come back, though, now. We have the right to either renegotiate that or to reject right. that if you know, there are significant massive changes in the markets that cause our costs when we actually issue the bonds to be much greater than what we anticipated now. Is that an accurate summary?
Fair.
Correct.
Okay, I think I understand. Everyone else understand? Okay. Thank you. All right, back to 6F through 6I. 6J through 8B. Nine A through 9D. Nine E through 10B. Okay, so we have one, Ms. Spinner, we have one public hearing we have to hold, right? 9A?
9A and 10A, Mayor.
Oops, I'm sorry, I missed that one. Thank you. So two public hearings. Sorry, I missed that. All right, 10A and 9A and 10A. Okay. Is that it? Next item on the agenda is to hear presentation, discuss, and provide direction whether to expand council oversight for service contracts. This comes from a recommendation from the Audit, Finance, and Enterprise Committee.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Council. Ed Quedens, Business Services Director. So as you summarized, this recommendation is coming forward from the Audit and Finance Committee. We met with them on December 1st. The committee voted 2-1 to move forward to the council, a discussion about whether or not services would, the oversight of services would be expanded to council approval, and the committee did recommend that they go that path. As we discussed at the Audit and Finance Committee, we have heard stories from other municipalities where they don't have procurement policies, and we do have our procurement policy established through quite a few places. City Charter, City Code, which in the case of procurement was updated in February, Arizona Revised Statute Title 34 for construction, Management Policy 200, which was updated in May of this year, last year. We developed standard procurement rules, which are based on the American Bar Association Model Procurement Code. And then we do have other policies and bulletins that relate to specific targeted topics. Section 609B of the City Charter requires council approval for purchases of all materials when that is over $25,000. It does contain a definition of materials that includes supplies, commodities, equipment, insurance, and capital improvements. Thought process in the past has been, since procurement of services is not outlined in the City Charter or in the Mesa City Code, that it currently falls in the daily duties of the city manager for those approvals. The engineering department is responsible for capital improvements, also known as construction and related professional services. And per the city code, capital improvements are procured in accordance with the procedures established in Title 34 of Arizona Revised Statutes. Purchasing division is responsible for all other procurements. We updated our procurement policies over the last year. City code and management policy 200, as I said earlier. We created our standard procurement rules, and then following that, we updated all our solicitation boilerplates, forms, website, all those ancillary documents and locations. In our policy, we discuss services. Generally, services are the furnishing of labor, time, or effort which will result in the desired outcome, not necessarily through delivery of materials, and examples of those are landscaping, painting services. In non-professional services out of the construction realm, we're looking at attorneys, entertainers, auditors, consultant studies, pro tem judges, and in professional services for construction, we're looking at engineers, geologists, architects, landscape architects. And generally, the differentiator is that a professional service requires special knowledge, education, or skill, where general services are more of providing just a general labor. The procurement methods for services was a big part of what we updated in our policy updates in 2011. Before those policy updates, we really didn't have a lot of structure wrapped around services. We determined and felt that there needed to be a much greater structure, so that's what we built into the policy updates. For non-construction, greater than $25,000 are now done through competitive selection, which is a bid proposal qualifications, unless the city manager determines that that's not practical or advantageous to the city. For professional services, that threshold rises to $50,000. It's relaxed just a little bit. It's that the it's recommended to go through a competitive selection, but again, if it is not going to go through that, it has to be approved by the city manager to go an alternate path. Professional services for construction, again, are governed by Title 34, and they are done in compliance with the procedures established in Title 34. And then we do, in the policy, Management Policy 200, we do exempt certain services from competitive selection, which you can see the list there, notably artists, attorneys, and things that don't necessarily fall within the box of a competitive selection easily. For our approval thresholds for materials insurance as well as construction, anything over $25,000 comes to council, and the city manager approves greater than $25,000 for services and professional services. So in what we did is we went back through the council reports for 2011, and we tallied up the number of items that were brought to council for approval. Again, this would be materials, capital equipment, and capital improvements in construction over $25,000. And you see that we brought forward 204 items between purchasing and engineering for nearly $120 million. For the administrative approvals, we looked at the services and professional services over $25,000, so that does exclude the small purchases, those under $25,000, as well as the benefit programs. And these are estimates, down bottom line, we're talking about 116 items that were administratively approved, and that's about $21 million total. You have received from staff periodic reports. Now, the difference is the two slides that I showed you before are items that went through the approval process, whether it's council approval or administrative approval. This slide shows a summary of the reports that we provided to council, which is a snapshot of open term contracts at the points in time where we generated those reports. There were three lists, purchasing, engineering, and citywide contracts. There were 681 items on those reports, and they totaled about $65 million. So this is just to give you an order of magnitude of the term contracts or contracts that have a period that were open at any given time that we generated that report.
Okay, Councilman Cavanaugh.
I just have a question. I don't recall getting these reports, but then again, being the old person that I am, I might have overlooked them, but when did these reports start coming to council?
I believe the last one was the end of October.
What was the first one? Was like September?
That would be about right.
Three or four?
I believe we've sent out two so far, but it could be three.
Yeah, I think since September, October.
And they would have come out from Trish Sorensen.
Yeah, there was a...
Okay, that's who would be...
Yes.
Okay.
I believe the last one was October 27th.
That way I can go back and...
Yeah, the end of October. Yeah.
Right. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah,
Trish Sorensen. And they were a... Like an Excel file?
Correct.
Yeah.
It was a spreadsheet?
Yes.
Came out.
I don't remember ever seeing one.
Oh, okay.
Examples of items that are on those reports, the ARF services out at Phoenix Mesa Gateway Airport, architects, attorneys. I'm not going to read the entire list to you, but you can see it's quite a few. And notably, these are not all traditional procurement contracts. You see Downtown Mesa Association for the parking management. Downtown Mesa was also on there for their maintenance and marketing activities. Water use it wisely, not a traditional procurement. So these aren't all traditional procurements. Some of them are other types of agreements that are being reported on by the departments at our request. One of the things that staff has been working on to increase transparency is development of a report of newly awarded service and professional services contracts over $25,000, which we intend to start at the end of January. January would be the first reporting period. I believe you should have seen a sample of that attached to the packet for tonight's meeting. And work does continue on City Edge, which will end up being their central repository of agreements and purchase contracts. So we'll be able to, as we move into the latter half of the year, be able to generate reports a lot easier than we are today to summarize contracts that are open and out there.
And Ed, this sounds maybe like a simple question, but how does that help us? How will City Edge help us when you say generate reports? What exactly?
The major thing is that contracts, instead of all residing in departments, contracts will be required to be put into Advantage, the City Edge solution, because unless they're in Advantage, no payments will be able to be made against those contracts. So we will be centralizing the storage of those contract documents, really for the first time in Mesa's history, which will help us with accountability and transparency.
Okay, now, could you please repeat that in English for us?
They'll all be in one place.
They'll all be in one place.
That's a big starting point.
Not only will they be in one place, but like as I understand it right now, if, let's say, ABC Company is, and if ABC Company's out there, I apologize because I didn't mean it to be personalized. If they sign a contract, let's say Parks and Rec,
yes,
to do something. They also sign a contract with Police Department.
Yes.
Both City of Mesa, both very, very different. Right now, our system, because we really have no system, doesn't know that ABC Company is doing two separate contracts for the City of Mesa.
Except for the reports that we generate for council, that's correct.
Right. Under City Edge, when Parks and Rec enters that contract in for what they're doing with ABC Company and PD enters that in, you'll know literally almost in the touch of a button, because it will accumulate that and say there are two
That's
contracts
correct.
With ABC Company, and you now know exactly what's going on.
That's correct.
And you can tell what's going on with City. You also have the actual contract terms and all that, whatever the
Those documents
system
will
requires.
Be
And that's what City Edge will provide us.
That is what City Edge will
okay.
provide. Now, that is also coupled with the policy changes that we made last year. The services and professional services have a much greater structure around how they get procured. So we already have a much greater visibility to the contracting activities going on in the city. My staff is really feeling that workload. But it will take time to transition away from all those old contracts into new contracts that are going through that process.
And tell me, I would assume with City Edge that since they're all accumulating it, that right now you talk about those policies and procedures being changed, that they're also being, there's a certain level of conformity you have to have, because going back to my ABC Company, Parks and Rec can't enter in the contract in a different way than PD does, because the system is going to be designed.
That's correct.
That there's going to be a standard that will be applied citywide.
Yes.
Therefore, whatever potential differences or non-conforming processes that are used now, the system itself will correct that, because like you said, in order to enter the contract in, you've got to follow the standard procedure, or else the city will not process pay for that.
That's correct.
So that's how you get a certain amount of
conformity
across it.
They won't end up in the right place to allow that payment to be made, yes.
Okay.
And just one other point real quickly, Mayor, that as you were having the conversation, one of the things that's important, too, is that not only will it be centralized and the transparency, but it will also help put red flags if there are contracts out there that go beyond the period of their term. Today, we could have departments could have contracts without some kind of a procedure or process that electronically flags that contract that says, you know, this was supposed to be for a two-year period or whatever, and it goes, it could easily go beyond that because there really isn't always a centralized way to track that. This time, that will be part of the component processes they get entered in, so that not only does it become more transparent and readily accessible, but the management of the contracts is significantly greater than it has been.
Yes.
Well, and the, so I, right now, you unless you have a manual tickler file that is not kept in a central location,
I mean, we have
there's no way to track
it. And
that.
One of the things we found is over the last three or four years, as we've had to reduce staffing, a lot of the areas that we've reduced is in administrative areas. And so you may have had one person who put together the contract initially, put it in the file, and you know life goes on and the work's being done. The next person coming in, unless they go back into those files and check every single file, they may not know the terms of that contract. This, we've hopefully begun to tighten up with our procedures and processes, but also just having the central database that it's not just the person who's writing or overseeing that contract who has ability to look at it, but even Ed's folks can look at it, the department director can look at it. There's a lot more eyes.
The computer's looking at it.
Well, yeah, there's just a lot more eyes
on it. Yeah, because you're looking at dates and the computer will automatically key those dates that come
up. That's correct.
Councilmember Higgins.
Thank you, Mayor. And I just have a question on slide, I guess it's slide 14. We're talking about awarded service and professional service contracts. I know that in audit and finance there was a definition difference between professional service contracts and professional services. Is this now all it rolled into the same thing, or is it still two different things? Because we had talked about professional services and professional service contracts as being two different things, because not all professional services have a contract. And that's what I remember from audit and finance. I'm wondering if this is different.
No, all, excuse me, Mayor, Councilman, all services, whether they are a commodities, labor purchase service, or a professional service, should have a contract.
The
question is what's going, is how they're chosen, how they're selected may be different.
Correct.
Some are bid. If there is a bid-driven commodity, like we essentially purchase labor for janitorial services or landscaping, those are bid out. If we're procuring, and I use that word, an attorney or a
engineer,
that it's not a bid process.
Sure.
But there's still contracts for each one of them because you want to know what the terms are, what the rates are. All those things are included in each one of them. So it's not necessarily between a contract. It's really how the decision
is. Can we get away from using professional on both those categories?
Well, right.
They're really not professional.
Right.
One of them is more of a service, a contracted service.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that would be your landscapers and your
painters.
And the other one would be professional services where a profession is involved. And that would be lawyers, doctors, engineers, those kind of places.
Correct.
And,
right?
And I asked this question, Mary, because there was in the audit report, it had two different categories.
Okay.
Professional services and professional service contracts, if I remember correctly, Councilmember Finter.
I think it, like what the mayor says, it was that other services, and maybe it was mislabeled in that report, but there's definitely different types of services that kind of span what sometimes we include in as professional services. So it's a little, it's definitely been hard to kind of understand and see how it's broken out.
Well, isn't the difference based on your schedule back here, the way in which they're awarded?
Slide 7 probably helps. Slide 7 probably helps.
7.
Where that definition, I think, was.
Well, yeah, and it seems like if it's more of a commodity.
Right.
Which would be for landscapers.
There's a bid process.
There's a bid process. And that's basically price-driven, although performance, well, with anything, performance is there.
It's still scored, but
it's a bid. Lowest bidder is going to be the...
Has a large component.
Because it's a commodity.
Right.
Correct.
You know, an engineer is not a commodity. An engineer, there may be specialized skill set that you need, just as you described. So isn't the process used to acquire those, basically define the difference between... Contract
services in general are either acquired through a bid process or a proposal process. Professional services most often will use request for qualifications. Okay. So rather than basing it on a price component.
Yes.
Okay. Except I'll throw something out, but like going out for like a printing contract.
Correct.
Or service.
Right.
That, where does that, you know?
Just regular services, non-professional services.
So that would be a commodity.
That would be a bid. That's
either
a bid.
A bid or a proposal process, depending on what we want to evaluate in the award process.
So, yeah, getting back to it, it seems like that's self-defining. If it's a bid or a proposal.
It's generally just non-professional services.
Okay. If it's request for
qualifications,
that would be professional.
Which helps. Yeah, it really is the definition of what a professional service is. So you're procuring their qualifications or expertise versus a commodity of labor, maybe, most likely, is what you're procuring otherwise.
And one of the cultural changes that we are going through is a change in terminology or corrections in terminology. And
it might be a good idea, because I sort of sense that there's a little bit of an issue here.
One of the things that happened in Mesa's history was we had an object code, a part of our accounting string, that was called professional service other. And so anything that really didn't fall into one of those other categories, whether it was truly a professional service that, you know, engineering and purchasing would define it as, or if it was just any other service, always got dumped in this bucket, professional service others. So we've had a lot of culture change that we've been working on since the policy update to help people identify the difference between non-professional services and professional services.
And you've changed that category to professional services miscellaneous.
We've actually made two categories.
Yeah, okay.
And maybe I missed the whole point of your presentation. I hope I did not, but it's always possible. Are we changing our current process to a process where things over a certain amount of money are coming before council, whether they are services or professional services?
And that is the we're seeking direction from council. The issue that came forward from the audit and finance is whether to expand council approvals to include service contracts and professional service contracts as recommended by the committee.
Oh. You just confused.
I'm sorry.
I think the recommendation that you have here is only for the non-professional, the contract services, the non-professional.
I don't think we have a recommendation because the committee asked that the conversation come forward to council, and then with definition, we would sort out what services come to council, what services and professional services do or don't
come
to council.
Yeah, I don't want to speak for you, Councilman.
Yeah,
I think
Councilman Fenter,
we at the end started having this conversation during that time about, I think, with the city attorney about the distinction. Is that correct?
Yes, there was definitely one. And generally, you know, if I could read this,
go ahead.
Because it's so complex, forgive me if it sounds, it said the motion directing staff to draft an ordinance mandating or calling for all expenditures greater than $25,000 in value be brought before a public meeting of the City Council for approval in advance of the execution. The ordinance will contain a list of services and expenditures exempted from the City Council approval. And the ordinance would stipulate that a quarterly report be provided to the Council listing some of these expenditures. And the criteria I was hoping is found in Management Policy 200, and that is what we currently don't require bidding for, which really captures.
Which is the,
think it gets back to the self-defining.
Well, and I have a list of all these if you want me to read
it. And I think that goes back to our distinction between commodity services and professional services. I think that section 200, if I'm not mistaken, begins to pull out and distinguish the professional services.
Well, am I oversimplifying this? Because it seems like, once again, I don't want to mention again, if it's bid or proposed, doesn't that capture all those, or those it doesn't?
You know, the idea was a high order professional for all the reasons that I've heard and been looked at for decades. You don't want to go through a bidding process. You don't want to expose some of that in some of the general open meetings. But everything else, all those other services, be captured in an approval process with the council.
I think based on that conversation that we had with the audit and finance and now having this conversation with council, if that's the direction, using, I think, the template or the some of the wording there in that management policy and making sure that's just clear, we may want to add just a, let us draft, or, well, I shouldn't speak on behalf of the city attorney. I think we can approach it that way. And what if I hear correctly, is if the council is comfortable, audit and finance is comfortable, because we kind of had the conversation at the end, is really creating this distinction within what we call the services large category between professional services that are procured through a qualifications-based process versus those are really kind of focus on low bid processes, then we can make that distinction.
Okay.
And moving forward.
Do we,
that is the spirit of what I think we're okay. trying to forward.
Is there any problem, council members, of them moving forward with that kind of ordinance? Okay, I think you're, Councilman Richens.
Sorry, the network approves moving forward.
Do you want us to let you swallow first before we ask you to speak? What we said is that based on the conversation is staff and the city attorney's office, we've given them direction to go ahead and prepare an ordinance and come back with some specifics as it relates to that distinction between professional services and the commodity or contract non-professional services, and that they come back to the council with a proposal on that. That includes that.
Going forward in that direction.
Okay.
Can I ask a question? I didn't understand that to be exactly what you said, Councilmember Fincher. I thought there was a section of professional services that you wanted included. I thought that's what we had discussed. Whereas, you know, we're talking about maybe your professional.
Well, why don't we do this?
So,
I didn't mean to cut you off, but why don't we let the staff and then come back with an attempt to get that, but they can move ahead with an ordinance that proposes a certain, that there will be a list that would be required to be approved by council. We can talk about which is in what.
We'll
list
do
or
two
whatever.
Things, I think, in there. It's both, and I think in management policy tries to do the same thing. It tries to describe right. what a professional service is, and then it gives kind of a list of examples.
Right.
Okay. So that's how I think
we
would
talk
come
about
back
what's
is
in that
describing
list.
Right. And the list Later. Was intended to be here's our description of what we think how they're procured, but here's to make it abundantly clear, we kind of gave six or seven,
narrative.
Maybe more, narrative of those types of services that are contemplated under that.
Yeah, let's do that. You can come. We can talk about specifics that are in that list. I once again have to think that how those are acquired is sort of self-determining, but we can
right.
come back with that.
I just don't want to, one of my point was is that I think what will drive it is we'll try to give the definition of defining of professional services with these examples, but not necessarily that's the exhaustive list. As long as we meet the way we go about doing it, that's the key.
Okay. But I think, you know, there's no doubt, I think the intent is if something is bid based on price,
yes,
that's something that
we bring to council.
We ought to
over 25,000
would want to bring to council.
Correct.
Okay?
That's fine.
If it's bid on price. Okay. And we'll trust you to come back with some.
Yep.
And then we can talk about
I think they're working on this long enough that it shouldn't be
okay.
too long.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks, Ed.
Thank you.
Sorry to move you along, but we've got a very important presentation by the fire department here. Here presentation on item number 2B, here presentation and discuss a grant application that will be used for the physician's assistant pilot program by the fire department. Chiefs.
Good afternoon, Mayor.
Good afternoon.
Council.
It's always a tough act to follow. We're here today. First, let me introduce Dan Stubbs, Executive Assistant Fire Chief, who's going to do a presentation of detail today. Also, have staff here to answer any questions you may have as we go through this. It's actually pretty straightforward. We're here today to request council direction to allow the fire department to submit a grant to the Center of Medicare and Medicaid Innovation for an expanded physician assistant pilot program. As you recall, we have been engaged in pilots with physician's assistants to offset some of the overload in the emergency rooms, as well as the high activity with our ambulance companies, which tend to hold our response units in an incident longer than what is necessary. So we've been able to manage our response times through the TRV program, plus actually improve the level of care through the physician's assistants. This grant came to our attention by way of a tip from Vice Mayor Summers. And what we discovered is this, it's a rather unique opportunity with a very short window to react. The essence of the possibility is that we are going to be requesting, with your approval, putting in an application for up to $12 million, although that number is beginning to move around as we begin to explore the concepts. This grant is basically a research grant. There is no matching funds required. We are not required to continue with an ongoing program at the end of this. Clearly, if we, but we are expected to evaluate and try to put in place what would be a model that could be reproduced in other areas of the country. We believe that we're in a strong position to apply for this grant in that we have had considerable experience with the other with the TRV program as well as our PA component with that. So with that, I'll let Dan give you some more of the dates and some more of the details, and then we'll answer your questions.
Mayor and Council, thanks again. I was invited up last Thursday morning study session by Vice Mayor. Gave you kind of a Reader's Digest version. I'll give you a little bit more tonight. As Chief pointed out, it's a research or concept grant, different than the other grants that we've had. Usually we either get stuff like equipment or service like training. This one's going to be, really, it's a model that we're going to test. Our goal is to test innovative health and care payment models and service delivery models. Our goal is to develop the best practice model. There's nobody out there doing this right now, so there's no place we can go to and say, okay, they're doing it this way. What can we steal from them? What can we borrow from them? Our goal is to develop. It's a conceptual grant. And as Chief pointed out, we have a very compressed grant announcement and application period. We got word of this right before Christmas. If we have approval, we have to submit our grant this Friday. So we've been doing a lot of work under a very short window. The personnel we have for this, it's a pretty expensive grant, as you saw in your report. It's for a three-year term. Our goal is to contract all the employees in this, or hire back employees, to not bring on any FTEs during this three-year period, unless it just absolutely makes the perfect sense and we get approval by everybody to do it. But right now, everybody that we have looks like a contract or a hire back situation. We want to develop a personnel model that fits the program needs. If this program is going to continue, one of our goals out of the program will be bringing forth a personnel model of either contract and or hiring FTEs that makes sense. One of the biggest things that we know we need to get out of this three-year period, and one of the things we need to contract for, is a grant performance and accountability manager. It's going to be key to the success of this program, to having the oversight in this, making sure that we're following everything that we need to follow on this, since there is no model out there for us to choose or look from. On the billing side, we expect to contract for our billing model. It's a mock billing, so we get to play around with this. But part of this is to develop a home treatment billing model, and that's one of the key components of this. I'll give you an example on the behavioral health side, which is something we're really going to look at in here. Right now, if we have somebody that we get a 911 call, and all these calls we're talking about are coming through the 911 system now. We're not going out looking for more calls or creating new categories or anything like this. They're already in the system. We go on a behavioral health care call right now. We have to clear that person through the emergency room. Even if they don't have any outward signs of injury or anything else, we've got to clear them through an emergency room before we can take them to a behavioral health specialist or send them that way. Depending on how busy the emergency rooms are, some of these patients remain in the emergency room areas for days, which means that cost, while they're waiting to be processed, of having somebody attend them, especially if they're a juvenile, they can remain up for 2 to 3 days. Now, all of them don't remain there, so I want to paint a picture that everybody goes through there, but we know that some of these patients will remain for days. Our goal is to be able to clear these people out in the field and get them to their proper placement. It'll only save our time, but it will also save a tremendous amount on the billing side, on the Medicare and the Medicaid side, of having to spend those hours or days in the emergency room. Program sustainability. As Chief pointed out earlier, fortunately in this grant we don't have a match, and we are also not required to do anything past the 3 years. If we as a city and a department decide that this is just not the right direction to go or the right way to go, we can walk away from it and we have no strings attached. If we do find that this is something that's beneficial to the city and we want to continue with it, we will certainly develop a program in this three-year period that is scaled to fit a sustainability model. And in the three-year time frame, that's going to be another key component that we're going to be looking for, is what model can we have that fits the recovery model we have from our mock billing.
Dan, Vice Mayor has a question.
Not so much a question, Mayor, but a comment. This grant came to my attention as part of my work I've been doing on the National EMS Advisory Council. Just to remind people, it's a short window grant. The grant was released the week before I went back to Washington, D.C. in December, and they had to submit a letter of intent within 3 weeks. So this was a very short-term period. But the innovation grant, the interest here is that for folks to access their health care through the fire department, And then through the emergency room, ultimately, is the most expensive way to gain health, to gain get into the healthcare system. And the TRV model that the fire department has been experimenting with offered a unique opportunity to work with Medicare and Medicaid and exploring ways that we can provide not only less expensive health care, but better health care. No one else in the country is doing anything like this. The closest thing that I have seen are efforts simply to reduce what's called frequent flyer calls for low emergency calls, but this goes beyond that. This reaches out to people potentially to become preventative medicine by reaching out to a number of our home health care facilities who have a lot of folks who are tied there in our residential neighborhoods who can't get up and out to see the doctor who ultimately called 911 or out. This is a potential outreach to our behavioral folks. A potential outreach to folks who are chronic 911 callers, not because they have low-level emergencies, but because they have diseases that are very difficult to manage. They are locked in their homes, and they can't seem to get out. This is an opportunity to do outreach for them. It's also an opportunity to work with some private partners on the other side. Hospitals are interested in reducing the number of patients that they see return to their emergency rooms, because they have complications from discharge, and the complications happen because they're not following up with their physicians as they should. This potentially is an outreach to those folks. It offers the opportunity maybe to work with some of our transport partners eventually for transporting facilities that aren't emergency rooms. That ED is expensive, much more expensive than, say, the urgent care center. There's a potential there for to decide if there's a model that leads to that direction. So. Truly, Mayor, this is an opportunity for the City of Mesa and the Fire Department to provide national leadership and innovation in emergency medical services and public health. Thank you.
Thank you, Vice Mayor. And I would agree, this is a real opportunity. But I want to make sure, and there was something you said, and I know Chief Beck and I have talked about this, because I'm very leery whenever we start getting money for programs from the federal government. Because the idea that you get money from the feds with no strings attached beyond the time is a novel concept, let's put it that way. I want to make sure but if it's a research grant, and that was interesting to me that you did it that way, or that you described it that way, because I think that makes it a very different, mm-hmm. Gives it a very different profile, because research has a set beginning and a set end, and I like that. One thing I'm concerned, though, is internally that we do manage it, as you said, not only to create a sustainability, but also plan for an inevitability. Because the day we start, I'm a little worried that you can get caught up in the fact that this is a program, and then all of a sudden the pressure to continue causes you to make decisions you might not continue or you might not make if you weren't determined at the very start. I think the decision has to be that this is ending in 3 years. Or at the end of the grant, and if there is something to push us else to another conclusion, then we'll take that. But I'm very leery of the fact that we would get into a program that we would then trap ourselves in. So I would hope that when we start out, and I would support it only if we start out by being very upfront with people that this is a short-term proposition, and we'll watch it, and it may prove beneficial enough, and we may learn enough that we decide to go against that and decide this is worth pursuing on our own. But I think that has to be the decision, rather than, wow, we're stuck in this now, we've got all these people who rely on it, and I think that those are two different, very different scenarios. So that's sort of a warning, because I've seen these things happen where you get in with good intentions to make this temporary, and then all of a sudden the federal government doesn't require you to extend it, but you've sort of dug yourself into a hole. And I know we can avoid that. I just want to air that warning.
Mayor, to maybe provide a little comfort for you and others who maybe have a similar concern, we have been on and off again with our PA program over the last several years,
right. Primarily
because our model has always required a certain amount of cost recovery to go right along with that service. And we have struggled developing the continuity and the partnerships locally to try to bring all the sides together to make that happen. So one of the main things even that Medicare wants from this is a model to reduce costs. So I think for us this to be successful, we're going to have to figure out a way to bring all the interested parties together to leverage our interests, reduce costs in areas, and then be able to show that it's still a profitable enterprise. At the same time, having Medicare come out performing in a more efficient manner. And I think just based on the limited experience we've had with the TRV program, that we can do that. Whether or not we can, to what level we can provide the service based on that is still the unknown that we're really going to look forward to finding out.
Yeah, and that's the purpose that we're doing this. Is there's a lot of success and failure built into this process because it's a research process.
Yes. Okay. This is truly an experiment. You know, most of the time we talk about pilots, generally there's an intent there that something's going to work out and you're going to carry forward. This more meets the definition of a true experiment for 3 years.
We think that the upside is enough, then we've got enough experience on it that it's worth pursuing. Because if it turns out to be right, then we have set ourselves up for a new model that then can be shared with others and can be expanded even in our own department.
That's correct. And okay. I appreciate you taking my call the other night. I know it was late, and I appreciate your support.
Okay, no problem. It's what I do when I'm away. Take calls at 10:30 at night. Go ahead. Any other questions? No, it was great. That was fine.
Okay.
I think last Thursday it's already done, or do we need direction? It's on the agenda. Oh, that's
right. We just talked about, yeah.
I'm sorry about that. We just talked about it. It is formal agenda. I still got jet lag, but go ahead.
I bet.
All righty.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, acknowledge receipt of minutes. I think we just read some of those minutes. So we have a motion by the Vice Mayor, a second from Councilmember Higgins. All in favor say aye.
Aye. I vote aye.
Thank you. Hear reports on meetings and or conferences very quickly. Councilmember Higgins.
We had a great turnout to all those that came to my pancake breakfast on Saturday. City staff was awesome. People were lined up to give suggestions and ask questions, and it was a lot of fun. And thank you all to my council members for your support. Everyone came and ate awesome eggs and pancakes like no one else can cook but the fire department. Thank you.
I did not come to that, and I apologize for that, but I didn't. Actually, I got home late the night before, and I would like to apologize to Amy. I got there late because I sort of overslept and forgot, but wonderful event at Amy, a great recognition of the Whiteman family, integral part of our community who has supported Amy, the Arizona Museum for Youth, from the very beginning, and was one of the founding people, and then have supported through its years, and they had a great commemoration of all their efforts as part of the wrap-up of the Warner Brothers animation art. And here was a great thing, just one quick thing about Amy. We were having the event, and the museum opened, and we were literally shouting because it was so noisy in there. And not a single person asked anyone to be quiet because the noise was coming from literally dozens and dozens of kids that were in there enjoying the museum. And it was a great sight to say, wow, we're having to talk over kids who are making noise because they're enjoying the experience here. So it was really great. So one of the gems in our community, all of our museums are gems, but the Arizona Museum for Youth is a special gem. Councilmember Cavanaugh.
Thank you, Mayor. I just want to report that District 3 coffee that we had Friday had actually a great turnout, and Heather Wolf was our guest speaker and told a lot of very interesting things in terms of the revolution that's taking place within our library system in a positive way, and a very positive response from the residents there. And I attended two events at Mekong Plaza, both Friday night and on Saturday, representing the city. This is the Lunar New Year. Friday night was the organization of Chinese Americans from Greater Phoenix held its first gathering in Mesa to celebrate New Year. And on Saturday, the Vietnamese community celebrated the Lunar New Year festival known as Tet in Mesa. And so that facility continues to be a great example of Asian American culture in our community. And I know they really appreciate all the ties they have with the city. Thank you.
Thank you. Anything else? Mr. Brady.
Thank you, Mayor. Just a reminder, this Thursday is the breakfast with the mayor at the Hilton, so we will be having our study session that morning. And then this Saturday is the Mesa Arts Foundation annual gala evening, so we invite everybody, an evening of musical magic.
You have no idea how magic it is. It is an evening. It is magic. Not quite the revolution that Councilmember Kavanaugh was talking about, but close to it.
Also, this Saturday is the 12th annual historic home tour from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., and you can get your tickets at themesamuseum.org, so if you want to go online and get those. And just a reminder that Tuesday, January 31st, is a District 6 Building Stronger Neighborhoods. That'll go from 6:30 to 7:30 at the East Mesa Moose Lodge. Should be interesting. And our next study session will then be Thursday, February 2nd.
Okay. Thank you very much. Anything else? We have a motion to adjourn from the Vice Mayor, Second Councilmember Glover. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All right. We'll see you upstairs. Mr. Richens will also see you upstairs. Or we'll hear you upstairs, I guess.